everyone. Welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock, where I am excited to welcome Latoya Lee and Megan McCullough, who are co-leads of our quality and compliance practice within Clarkston. Latoya focuses on the life sciences industry and Megan focuses on the consumer products industry. Today we're going to focus on consumer products, and it's something we've talked about on this podcast in the past, but what does quality and consumer products look like? How do you strike that right balance between quality and speed? How do you potentially segment your quality strategy across your portfolio? How do you provide product transparency in light of increasing consumer demands? And how do you monitor that quality in real time? So we're going to hit upon a bunch of these topics. Really excited to have Megan and Latoya join us. Enjoy the conversation, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks. Latoya, Megan, welcome to Taking Stock.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to see you both. Hope you both had, this is a Monday morning recording, which is unique for us. Normally we're recording on a Friday afternoon. And so we are, our brains are fresh. We're not fried from the course of the week. So I'm expecting very big things.
No pressure.
None at all. But in all seriousness, I'm excited to chat with you both around a topic that I've been really passionate about for a long time, but really need to lean on folks like you both to provide a perspective around what does quality and consumer products mean. We are, as you both know, as a consulting firm, we have spent a good part of our history helping traditionally life sciences companies think about their quality and regulatory and compliance strategies. Obviously, with life sciences companies, this is a kind of burning platform for them, and it always has been. But more and more, we see it coming up with consumer products companies. And one of the things that our CP clients have struggled with is what is that right balance and what is that right level of regulatory compliance that's required within their organization. So that's at a high level what I want to hit upon. And it's really cool to have you both here, Latoya, leading our, both of you leading our regulatory, our quality compliance, quality and regulatory community within Clarkston. Latoya, you from a life sciences perspective, and Megan, you from a consumer products perspective. So Latoya, first I want to get your thoughts, because obviously you've spent a good part of your career working with life sciences organizations. But when you think about quality within consumer products, what does that mean to you from a life sciences perspective when you hear quality in consumer products? What do you think about?
The first thing I think about is the level of rigor, right? So our life sciences companies, and for good reason, have much more stringent regulations they have to adhere to. For drug products are going to be regulated much more strongly than, say, cosmetics. However, there's still regulations and there's still compliance that needs to be met for consumer products in the same way. And frankly, there's an ethical component to consumers making sure that the products that they're putting out in the market are of high quality, even for consumer products. So when I think about that, I think, you know, while the level of or the extent of quality may be different, the process that you go through to get there is still going to be the same. And frankly, the more commitment that you have to it as an organization, the easier it is going to be to put a quality product on the market and ultimately not only be good to your consumers, but to your bottom line as well.
Yeah, so the consumer piece of it, I do want to get to that in a bit, because I think that's such a unique challenge. But let's look, Megan, build upon what Latoya was referencing from a, when you look at consumer products companies, one of the interesting aspects of it, it's such a diverse set of products that CP companies are manufacturing. And one could argue that the level of regulatory scrutiny is going to differ greatly based upon those the portfolio of products that they might be manufacturing. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. And all that Latoya was mentioning is true. We're trying to find that balance right now for the CP companies of how much quality do we need, whether it's a full rigorous testing schedule, or kind of, we're also looking at who from within CP are the differentiators, and who's getting ahead of it and who's bringing quality into their organizations proactively rather than reactively. So I think within the CP, those companies that are focusing on quality and helping meet those consumer demands of quality, I know we'll touch upon it in a little bit, but are the ones that are succeeding and really have a step ahead in the quality space. Yeah. So really, from a manufacturing and quality perspective, learning what has worked in the manufacturing stages and applying it to the quality quality organization is really important. We see that on the CP side.
Yeah, you know, it's Megan, you read my mind with the proactive versus reactive. And that's probably what, when I think about, again, my beginner's mind as it relates to this, but when I think about LS versus CP companies, LaToya, it's fair to say that LS companies are trained to be proactive as it relates to this topic, right? They are, it is ingrained in the way that they, it's in their systems, in their processes, in everything that they do, is having a proactive mindset as it relates to quality and regulatory issues. CP companies, not so much. CP companies, it is much, hey, let's get as far as we can, or stretch it as far as we can until we get that slap on the hands. And now, okay, let's go react to it. So how do we transform that mindset? And does it need to be as strict? Probably not, right? That's why you don't need to be as far out there as a as an LS company. But how do you get CP companies to change their mindset to be a little bit more proactive where it makes sense?
I think it's a mindset shift, right? It's for sure. But I think if we can show the cost that is associated with being reactionary versus proactive, that can help. You know, what's the impact to your bottom line when there's a manufacturing defect with your product? You know, what's the impact to your competitive advantage if your competitors have higher quality products than in the same, you know, market space? So changing that mindset within the organization and in every part of the organization, from the, you know, the technician on the manufacturing floor to the lab analyst, even to HR, you know, with the way they're deploying learning. I think if everyone comes in with that quality mindset and recognizes that the investment that we're making up front is going to help us long term, and starting with a quality mindset, we can find ways to make that process more efficient and less costly and less burdensome to the organization, and still put out a very high quality product that our consumers are going to appreciate.
Yeah. So Megan, is it a question of risk then, like in terms of how far CP companies are willing to push it? Because one of the things that in conversations with consumer products companies is the challenge of speed to market, right? We don't want to do anything that's going to slow us down. Even consumer products divisions of larger pharmaceutical companies, you know, you see that within the consumer healthcare space, they often feel constrained by this massive pharmaceutical organization that they are a part of. And because of that, they are losing momentum. I think you mentioned, let's say, a competitive advantage. You're losing that in the market when you are putting perhaps too much rigor in place that's going to impact your ability to compete.
Yeah, and it's very true. As LaToya was speaking, I was thinking about quality culture, and you were using quality mindset, but the two go hand in hand in building that culture across the organization. But Steve, to answer your question, I think at Clarkston, we talk about the maturity model for a CP quality organization, and where does that right size model meet the needs of the organization to get product out the door, but also to have that level of quality that's perfect, that intersection point. So we do, that's one of the first things we look at, is where is the current quality maturity level at the organization, and then how can we build upon it from there and ingrain that quality culture.
Yeah, and what's interesting, you know, if you look at some of our, some companies within the consumer products industry, you know, if you're a life sciences company, you're essentially, it's going to be that pretty much, and LaToya, you could probably tell me I'm wrong, but pretty much there's going to be the same level of compliance that's going to be required across all facets of your business and products that are being, I mean, there might be some variations, but by and large, But for a consumer products company, when you are manufacturing, whether it's, let's just say that you manufacture pretzels all the way through more traditional packaged goods, what is the different level of scrutiny from a food product to a non-food product, from a beverage product to a non-beverage, within consumer healthcare, products that potentially are, you know, going in your body, that are being applied to your body. How do you, in your perspective and or guidance, and this is for both of you, does a CP company need a singular strategy as it relates to quality, or does it need to be very much varied based upon the products that they're manufacturing?
Yeah, very much varied. And we tell this to our life sciences companies too.
Okay, so I was wrong. You could have told me I was wrong.
I was trying to say it nicely, Steve.
There's no, for like, yeah, if, absolutely no need to be nice and or, yeah, go ahead, tell me wrong. Go for it.
That risk-based approach that I think you were are touching on is what we recommend to both. Yeah. There's going to be greater risk, obviously, with, you know, life sciences companies, but there's a level of risk for our consumer products companies. The difference is that that variation is much wider.
See, I was right. You see, you told me I was wrong.
I did. You were wrong. That was not quite the whole story.
Fair enough.
Because there is some variation for our life sciences companies as well. They do have products that have less risks associated with them versus, and you talked about it, that, you know, over-the-counter drugs have a different risk level than narcotics, yeah. For example. So taking a risk-based approach allows you to make a decision about the level of impact to safety, to quality, to the integrity of your. And by making a determination on the level of risk, that can help you interpret, you know, what kind of processes need to be in place to adhere to compliance. So by taking that approach, you not only can reduce, you know, the cost associated with it, but also, you know, that speed to market. You can make sure that you're implementing quality early on, making that investment up front. That way you can find ways to make it more efficient and make it more effective and get your product out the door in an efficient way that also has high quality infused.
Okay, great. So, Megan, let me get your perspective on this as we kind of transition to one of the things that I like to think about is accountability and or who is a consumer products company responsible for and or responsible to, I'm sorry. And especially for products that aren't regulated. All right. We deal in a world where a lot of products are not necessarily under the kind of regulatory purview of the FDA, but yet there's still a responsibility to the consumer, mm-hmm. right? And as we think about how companies are differentiating, obviously being able to ensure that consumers who care about quality, who more and more they care about the products that they are, again, either putting in their bodies and or applying to themselves or their kids or their families. What level of, how does that consumer responsibility and accountability kind of factor into how companies should be thinking about quality?
Yeah, of course. It's definitely a current ongoing thought that we think about. So consumer demands are definitely growing, for brand commitments. So they're looking at different brands and how they can be committed to them. They're thinking through they're looking at sustainability across brands and transparency. And I think as we look at food and beverage, or we look at cosmetics, as you mentioned, they want to know what is going into their body. Or in the cosmetic space, I just was reading about different e-certificates, so eco certificates that help provide more information about the products that they are applying to their skin or to different aspects there. So it definitely, from a consumer perspective, is something that the organization has to think through, and they are the main focus to get the product out the door is to make sure we're providing the best service and best product to our consumers.
Yeah, and also from a, you know, the way the world is now with social media and the ability for things to go viral in either a positive or a negative way, any sort of an adverse event tied to a product and tied to a false claim could really, really backfire. And again, you know, LaToya, that gets back to kind of the risk profile that you're willing to take. But, you know, things could spiral out of control really, really quickly, even beyond that of, you know, the scrutiny of the FDA.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I thought about when Megan was talking, like that brand loyalty is a huge deal these days. People are very, you know, committed to the brands that they use, that their family use, that they're thinking about, you know, what their neighbors are using, what their friends are using. And social media only compounds what that community looks like, those folks around them who they connect with, who are using the same things and doing the same things. So that brand loyalty becomes magnified. So obviously that's great when it's a positive impact, but when that negative impact hits, that reputational hit that you can take, not to mention the legal ramifications, are profound.
Yeah, I mean, I think like food safety is an example of that, right? You see companies that have been burned with, you know, recalls where they are trying to take more of a proactive approach, but also going out there and marketing around that. That this is a competitive advantage for us, knowing that consumers, like sustainability is an example that you referenced, Megan, consumers care about this. And this is something that's going to be able to differentiate their brands and their companies in the eyes of their consumers. So let's be proactive in kind of getting out and communicating around it.
Absolutely.
I'm going to geek out for a little bit with you, Megan, if that's okay. I'm going to allow you to geek out a little bit. One of the things that that I know you're passionate about is around this idea of monitoring quality in real time and things that companies should be doing from an analytical perspective. Talk a little bit about that and why kind of the ability to more effectively kind of collect and monitor or applying analytics to do that could be helpful for a company.
Yeah, of course. It's in growing skill set in this world, both on the LS and the CP side. But I think with all the technology that is evolving and the data that's available, it's so important to be able to leverage that data and share it across organizations to make better decisions about the product or about the drug that's being manufactured. So I think a few things that I come to mind when I think about analytics in the quality space is definitely the cross-functional data management. So how can we pull data from different parts of the manufacturing process and help improve those quality metrics, whether it's predicting defects in the system or predicting defects throughout the even the return process, just being able to leverage the data in that space to make better decisions. And I think another area, manufacturing within these CP and LS companies, they've done a great job with really real-time monitoring and dashboards. And how can we, within the quality organization or quality space, really use that data and apply what manufacturing has learned within the quality space. So it's more self-serving platforms, easier to make quality decisions with the data that's available, and really just of being able to leverage with the systems that the companies have the important data.
Yeah, and then LaToya, right? So the ability to have that data at your fingertips allows and informs some of the decisions that you need to make in terms of, okay, where is the risk, right? And how do I kind of manage my processes accordingly?
Yeah, understanding, you know, trends, managing customer complaints, you know, getting that customer feedback and applying that feedback to your processes and your manufacturing, that's huge.
Thank you both very much for an awesome discussion. So I'm a little disappointed that no one can see the video, but LaToya, no purple? Nothing?
No, I'm representing my collegiate alma mater, North Carolina A&T today. So
awesome.
I have to go with the blue and gold today.
awesome. Love it. So thank you both for taking a little bit of time on a Monday and for helping educate me and everyone who's listening on these topics. A ton of fun, and I appreciate you both participating.
Thank you, Steve. Honored to be here.
Thanks. Honored. Thank you. You can hang on a little bit longer. That's great. All right. Thanks both very much. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
All right. So thank you everyone for listening in, and thank you Latoya and Megan for sharing your time with us today and sharing your perspectives. I think the big takeaways for me, there is no singular answer. And we talked about that during the discussion. I think that number one, consumer products companies with their diverse portfolios, I think you need to have a diverse strategy that accounts for those different products and those different requirements across those different products. I think any company needs to think through what is the right level of risk. What does that risk profile look for me within my organization is really important to consider. But then also instilling that mindset, and Latoya brought this up and Megan agreed, that you need to shift from what has traditionally been a very reactive mindset as it relates to quality and being more proactive, getting out in front of it and really seeing that there could potentially be some competitive advantage. If you do have a more proactive mindset and a greater level of transparency as it relates to quality, you can win in the market in a more effective way. So thanks everyone again for listening. I look forward to having you join us on future discussions. Have a great day.